want to probably cover only one major topic from this week's Sedra. And that is the personalities of Yaakov and Esav, and were they predestined to be one a Tzaddik and one a Rasha. You're all familiar with the Rashi, Vayisrotzitzu Habonim Bekirba. Rashi says, whenever she passed by a place of Avodah Zarah, Esav wanted to go out. And whenever she passed by a Beis Medrash, Yaakov wanted to go out. The obvious question is, that would seem to imply that which is the negation of the entire Torah. The entire Torah is based on the fact that people have free choice, and that they can choose to be tzaddikim or rishoyim, and they are not predestined to be either. Because if we are predestined to be a tzaddik or a rasha, and there's no free choice, then there can't be reward and there can't be punishment, and the entire Torah is meaningless. So here it seems like these two embryos already were destined, one to be a tzaddik and one to be a rasha. So this Rashi seems to contradict the entire foundation of Yiddishkeit. In addition, the Gemara says that there was an argument between Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, and Antoninus, who was the Roman Caesar. Some say that he was Anthony of Cleopatra and Anthony fame. And Antoninus was a tzaddik. In fact, in the end of his life, he converted. And he used to learn Torah secretly with Rebbe. And they had an argument, when does the Yetzer Hara become effective? When does the Yetzer Hara enter a person? On conception, that's what Rebbe Yehuda Anossi held. And Antoninus said, no, only at birth. And Antoninus bring proof to his side. And Rebbe admitted in the end that he was right, that the Yetzer Hara does not come to a person before birth. If that's the case, this Rashi also seems to contradict that, because Esav definitely had the Yetzer Hara running to serve Avodah Zarah before he was born. Next question. It says that Vayigdilu HaNe'orin, the first 13 years of their life after birth, no one took notice of them. They both went to school, came home from school, and nobody took notice that they were really different children. Once they became bar mitzvah, and Esav went out into the forest, and Yaakov went out to learn in the Beis Medrash, then people realized who they were. Very strange. Here are children who, as embryos, were very different. One was running to serve Avodah Zarah, and one was running to learn Torah. All of a sudden, they're born, and poof, no difference between them. And then just when they're bar mitzvah, immediately, then there's change. There's difference between them again. That's not how people are. People don't change so drastically overnight, not when they become bar mitzvah, not when they're born. So what's it mean? If in fact, next question, if in fact, Esav was predestined to be a Rasha. He was already running to serve Avodah Zarah as an embryo. So, and then they grew up, and Esav was out hunting, and Yaakov was sitting and learning. How did Yitzchak Avinu want to give him the brachas? How did he favor Esav over Yaakov? Didn't Yitzchak know who Esav was? And to say that Yitzchak Avinu was blind and he didn't know is sacrilegious. Yitzchak Avinu had Ruach HaKodesh. He was one of the Avos. He was such a naive person, he couldn't tell even what his own son was. And even if we'll say that Yitzchak in the beginning didn't know who Esav was, because it was very subtle, and Esav used to come to trick him and ask him questions in Halacha, but when Esav was 15 years old, that's when Avram Avinu died, and Esav came home tired from the field, and Chazal say that day he committed 3 or 5 major averis. Gili Arayish Vichazdomim and Avodizora. Hefty Averis for a 15-year-old. And Avram Avinu had to die that he shouldn't see Esav go Latarbus Ross. It was pretty obvious that Esav was off the derech. And Yitzchak didn't see it then. And he still wanted to give him the brachas after that. Now there are answers to all of these questions individually. I'm going to give you one answer that answers all of them together. And I'll show that Yitzchak did recognize the difference between his two sons. Because when Yaakov came in disguised as Esav, he slipped up twice that gave Yitzchak the feeling that this is not Esav. First, Yitzchak asked him, how could you make it back so fast? He said, Ki hikra Hashem elokech lefanai. God made it easy for me to find this animal to shecht and to bring you the food. Yitzchak said, this can't be Esav. Esav never mentions God's name. I've never heard Esav mention God's name. And here this person is mentioning God's name. He can't be Esav. The second thing he tripped up was, he said, Yakum na'avi, please get up. And Yitzchak said, I never heard Esav say please and thank you. So this can't be Esav. Here's a father who knows that one of his sons is not good, Beinarim Lamakum, never mentioned God's name. Not good, Beinarim Lechavero, he's uncouth, doesn't say please and thank you. And he has another son that does all of that, who sits and learns all day, and he wants to give the brachas to the son that he knows is something different. So obviously Yitzchak did know who Esav was. And lastly, if Yitzchak didn't know who Esav was, and he wanted to give him the brachas, but Rivka obviously knew. So instead of fooling her husband by dressing Yaakov up as Esav, why don't you just go to her husband and say, I have a big problem here. You want to give the brachas to Esav, and he's a Rasha, and you don't recognize that. The Ramban says that Rivka, from the time that she met Yitzchak, was overawed by him. She was intimidated. She couldn't come out right out and speak to him like that. But I really don't understand that Ramban, because in the end of the Sedra, Rivka, in no uncertain terms, tells Yitzchak where she wants Yaakov to go and who she doesn't want him to marry, and she tells him clearly what to do. So where did she get the courage in the end of the Sedra, and she didn't have it in the middle of the Sedra? And there were things that happened almost one after the other. In order to explain all of this, I want to first read you two Rambams. The Rambams are both in Mishneh Torah, same author, same book. You'll see the problem in a second. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Hei, Halacha Beis. Al yavor b'machshavtecha dover zeh she'omrim kipshei umos ha'olam v'rov golmi b'nei Yisrael. Do not entertain the thought. Don't let this thought cross your mind. What most foolish goyim think, and unpolished Jews. Shakadosh Baruch Hu gozer al ha'adam mitchilas briyoso li'al tzadik al rasha. That God decrees on a person from the time that he's born, from the time that he's conceived, from the very beginning of his creation, that he should be a tzadik or a rasha. Ein hadavar kein. It's not true. Elakol adam ra'ui Leo Sadik Moshe Rabbeinu O Rasha Ki Yeravam. Every human being can be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. You can't be a Navi like Moshe Rabbeinu, but you can be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu, or a Rasha like Yeravam ben Nevat. O Chacham O Sachol, or he can be smart or foolish. O Rachman O Achzori, he can be merciful or cruel. O Kilai O Shua, he can be stingy or generous. The chen shar kol adeus and all the other midos, the same thing. A person has the ability to use any midah he wants. The ain lo mishi yachfuhu, no one forces him. The lo gozer alav, none decrees on him. The lo mishi mosko le'echad mishne adrachim, nothing pulls him to either side. Elohu me'atzmo vidaito notele ezetzad derech sheyirtzeh. He, with his own volition, his own will, pushes himself to either side in all these things. Every midah, you want to be cruel, you can be cruel. You want to be merciful, you can be merciful. Nothing decrees, nothing pushes you. You have complete free choice. That's the Rambam, Hilchas Tshuva. Same Rambam, Hilchas Deos, same Sefer. Says the Rambam, Deos har be'yesh l'kol echad ve'echad ne'odam v'zu mishunem mizu rechokum imenu b'yosef. People have many different character traits, personality traits, from one extreme to the other. Yesh adam shu bal chema kois tami. There are people who have short tempers, always angry. Yesh adam shu daitu miyusheves olav. Some people are always calm. Yesh adam shu gvalei b'yosef. Some people are very haughty. Yeshu shvaruach. Some people are nebuchs. Some people are very sensual. Some people have no tithes at all. V'chein, the aldrachim elushar kol adeos. The same thing goes with all the other midos. Kigon mahol avon. Some people are happy-go-lucky, and some people are always sad. Kilai v'shua, generous and stingy. Achzori v'rachmon, merciful and cruel. Ukiyotze ben, etc., all the midos. So the Rambam mentions the same midos that he mentioned before. Now the Rambam says, okay, now we know people are different. They have different midos. Where do they come from? And then the Rambam says that there's not only the extremes, but people are different also in a million gradations between the extremes. Some people are somewhat stingy, somewhat generous, so on. The Chol Hadeos, all of these midos, where do they come from? What would you expect the Rambam to say? They come from a person's free will, his own choices, what he wants to be. Says the Rambam, no. The Chol Hadeos, Yesh Me'am Deos Shein La'adam Mitchilas Briyoso Lefi Teva Gufo. Some of them are part of his very nature. They're part of his nature. He was created with them. He was made to be generous or stingy or merciful or cruel. The Yesh Me'am Deos Shetivo Shalom Zem Mechuvin Vosa the Kabbalos of Meher Yosef Mishara Deos. Some were not part of your nature from your conception, but they were midos that you had more of a predisposition to. You were more easily drawn to that midah than its opposite. The Yesh Me'am She'enam Lodam, and some of them don't even come from your nature. Elalama those some, he learned from other people. Oh, Shepon Elohim Me'atzmo, or you inculcated them yourself, you made them yourself. So Rambam gives four possibilities. They are part of your nature, you have a predisposition to it, you learn from others, or your own free choice. So the Rambam says what he said you shouldn't even think, that any of these things are part of a person from his creation, that they're decreed on him. Seems to be a very big contradiction in Rambam's. Here the Rambam uses the same examples, merciful and cruel. Here he says nothing pulls you to either side, nothing decrees on you, it's all your free choice. And here the Rambam says people are born with character traits. Some people are merciful from the conception. Some people are cruel. Or some people have a predisposition. That means something pulls it to one side. Which is it? Second question on this Rambam. The Gemara says that when a person is conceived, the Malach, called Duma, brings those first few cells that are beginning to form into a human being, it's called a blastula, in front of the Ribono Shel Olam. It doesn't mean that the Malach takes that blastula, takes it out of the womb and brings it somewhere. It means it presents it before the Ribono Shel Olam, and it says, what is going to be with this person? Is he going to be strong or weak? Handsome, pretty, ugly? Rich or poor? Smart or not? One thing isn't mentioned, tzaddik or rasha. That's not decreed, but everything else is. What is one of the things that the Gemara gives as an example that is decreed? Your intellect. How smart you're going to be. And the Rambam said clearly that you can be as smart or foolish as you want to be. So the Rambam says that that is something that depends on your free will, and the Gemara says that that clearly is decreed, not dependent on your free will. The answer, I think, is very simple. These two Rambams are talking about completely different things. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos that says that a person from his very nature is inculcated with character traits, that a person can be born a person who is either more predisposed to be merciful or cruel, or by nature is cruel, by nature is merciful, is true. It's a fact of life. People have characters when they're born. They're not pariv and wait till they grow up to have free choice to make their characters. Two children, twins, can be brought home from the hospital. One is very calm and the other is very agitated. By nature, they're different children. Send the child to the gan. He's not yet ready to make life's choices. But some children go to gan and come home with everybody else's things. And other children go to gan and leave everything they have with their friends. Some are very generous and some are very stingy. By nature. That is the way of the world. However, that does not contradict what the Rambam said, that nothing forces a person to be stingy or generous or compassionate or cruel. There the Rambam's talking about behavior, not about character traits. Character traits are parith. There is no character trait that is good or bad. It depends on the situation. Every single character trait, without exception, in certain circumstances can be used for the good, and in other circumstances for the bad. So because you were born with a predisposition to be cruel doesn't mean you're a Russian. It means that that is your character trait. When it comes time to be cruel or merciful, you have the ability to use your character or to suppress it, if necessary. An example. Imagine you and your friend, Rachel and Leah, are walking down the street. Rachel was born with a predisposition to be merciful. And Leah loves to pull the wings off of insects, and has a predisposition to cruelty. You're both walking down the street to baseball practice with baseball bats in your hand. And a terrorist falls at your feet. He's just killed 200 innocent people in cold blood, and he's on his way to kill another 200 people. And he trips and falls right in front of you. And he looks up and he says, "Could you please help me up? I must go and kill another 200 people in cold blood." You have, at that moment, a choice to make. You can help him up and send him on his way, or you can take the baseball bat in your hand and crush his skull and put an end to this terrorist. What do you think is the proper response at that time? Does anybody feel the proper response is pick him up and send him on his way? Okay, so none of you belong to the ACLU. None of you are liberal leftists. You're all normal people. Okay. At that time, yes, the proper thing would be to take your baseball bat and crush his skull and rid the world of a terrorist. No shy. There's no other way. What are you going to do? Please don't. I agree with you. There's another way of doing it. Let's talk about it. How do you feel about terrorism? I will try to. Yeah, okay. There's no police. You're in the middle of nowhere. It's either crush his skull or he goes and kills 200 other people. Okay? I can make the marshal any way I want. That's it. Black and white. Okay? There is no other way. Okay? Under those circumstances, the proper thing would be to crush his skull with your baseball bat. You can't, there's nothing else you can do. You only have the baseball bat. Is it easy to crush somebody's skull with a baseball bat? I imagine not. It takes a certain amount of cruelty to be able to do it, even though ultimately this cruelty is real mercy to the 200 people he's going to kill. But it takes a certain amount of cruelty to crush somebody's skull with a baseball bat. Rachel, who is predisposed to cruelty, is going to have an easy time to do this mitzvah. She's going to really enjoy it. Won't be hard for her. It's easier for her at that moment to be a tzaddikus. Leah, who is by nature compassionate and merciful, is going to have a hard time doing what's right. She's going to have to overpower her nature, go against her nature, suppress her nature, and be cruel. Okay? So in that situation, cruelty is a positive midah, and mercy is a negative midah. On the other hand, they continue walking. They crush the skull of this terrorist. They continue walking down the street with their bloodied baseball bats, and a little old lady falls in front of them. Now they have another choice. We can either crush her skull with our baseball bats, or we can pick her up and send her on her way. What would you think is the proper response at this moment? Right. Pick her up and send her on her way. Now, Rachel, who is predisposed to cruelty, is going to have to suppress her nature and pick up the little old lady. And Leah, who is predisposed to mercy, is going to have an easy time of using her nature in the right way. So here, mercy is the positive midah, and cruelty is the negative. So it's possible in every midah to have situations where any specific midah will be positive and its opposite negative, and vice versa in other situations. The Rambam says it's true. It is a fact of life that people are born different, completely different, different midos, different makeup of midos. But that doesn't make you a tzaddik or a rasha, because you have free choice how to use those midos, when to use them, when to suppress them. Nothing forces you to use it one way or the other. Only your free choice. Behavior-wise, you are in control. What your character is something that is predetermined. Hold on one second. I probably will answer your question. If I don't, in the end, you can. If that's the case, there's still a question. And that is, it's still not fair. Because what would you say? How many times, percentage-wise, what percentage of time is mercy a proper midah, and what percentage of time is cruelty a proper midah? Okay, I would say about 90-10, yeah? 90% of the time, using your compassion is what is positive. There are exceptions about 10% of the time when terrorists fall at your feet that cruelty is demanded. So somebody who's born with a predisposition to mercy, as opposed to somebody born with a predisposition to cruelty, the person with the predisposition to mercy, 90% of the time, is going to be able to use his nature to do what's right. And only 10% of the time have a difficulty and have to suppress his nature. Whereas the other person, the opposite, 90% of the time is going to have to suppress his nature and only 10% of the time use it. So person A has an easier time of being a tzaddik than person B. Sure, so nothing may force you, but just statistically, right, it's easier to be a compassionate person and be a tzaddik than to be a cruel person and be a tzaddik. The answer to that is that there are three factors you have to take in consideration. Firstly, if we'd only have one character trait, the question would be a very good question. But we are not monolithic in our characters. We have many character traits. I may be by nature cruel, and you may be merciful. But by nature, I may be generous and you stingy. And that's the opposite. My nature is most of the time for the good, and your nature is most of the time for the bad. You're going to have a harder time using your midah of stinginess than I'm going to have using my midah of being, generous. So in one midah, I may have the negative one. In another, I may have the positive one. So it evens out. Still not a sufficient answer, because we all know people who have a predominance of either the good midos or the bad ones. Some people seem to be, by their very nature, generous and merciful and all the nice things, and calm, cool, collected. And other people seem to be angry, agitated, stingy, and cruel. So it doesn't answer the question 100%. Second factor to take into consideration. God is the one who gives you the situations in life that you have to face. And he knows your character, and he takes it into consideration. And he gives you situations in life that you can handle with the character he gave you. That's called God doesn't give you a nisayon you can't handle. It means he makes the nisyonos fit your character traits. He's the one who gave them to you. He's the one who gives you your situations in life. And the third factor is God takes it into consideration. He gives you a handicap. Give an example. Let's say I have a short temper and you're very cool, calm, and collected. And we're standing here. We walk into a room and somebody steps on our toes. Same time. And we both go berserk. I once went into a pizza shop in Miami when I was a rabbi there years ago. And by accident, I stepped on the toes of one of the waitresses. And she screamed. The middle of the place was packed with people. I'll never forget it. She screamed, "You always do that." I never was in that pizza shop before. I never saw this woman in my life. But obviously she was a little bit of an agitated person. Or she mistook me for somebody else. And she screamed. The whole place looked up. What's it called? As if I always walk into that pizza shop daily and step on her toes. So there are people. So she lost it. She went berserk. So we both go berserk. Scream, yell at the person who stepped on our toes. Who is going to get more of a punishment for losing their temper? Me or you? I'm the one who has a nature of being, have a short temper, and you're cool. You're going to get more of a punishment. What if we both control our temper? Who's going to get more reward? Me. So God takes it in consideration and gives me a handicap. So in the end, it evens out. Now let's apply it to Yaakov and Esav. It is a fact that Yaakov and Esav were different personalities. But that doesn't mean that one was to be a Rasha and one a Tzaddik. They both could have been Tzaddikim. They both could have been Rishoyim with the characters they had. To the best of my knowledge, and I've looked, and if you find a Medrash that says differently, it'll be a big problem with what I'm going to tell you. But I looked and I couldn't find it. To the best of my knowledge, there is no Medrash that says that when she passed the place of Avodah Zarah, Esav wanted to go out and serve Avodah Zarah. And when she passed the base Medrash, Yaakov wanted to go out and learn. It doesn't say that. It just says they wanted to go out, period. Esav and Yaakov had different personalities. Their personalities, both of them, could have been used for the good or for the bad. And it's possible, and I have no time to go into the details of this, but you can hear it just in the surface generalities. It's possible that had Esav made the right choices and Yaakov made the right choices, Klal Yisrael would have been built from both of them. Just like there were 12 Shvatim from Yaakov, there could have been 2 Shvatim from Yitzchak, Shevet Esav and Shevet Yaakov. And they would have both built Klal Yisrael. In fact, there's a Medrash that says that Yitzchak was supposed to have 12 Shvatim. For whatever reason, it didn't come out. So he could have 2 Shvatim. And even though it says, Ki bi Yitzchak yikari lechazorah, and not all Yitzchak, that doesn't mean that Esav was out of the picture. Maybe Yitzchak would have had other children, they would have been out of the picture. And not because they were Rishoyim. So, and perhaps, these 2 Shvatim would have been the following. Klal Yisrael has 2 kinds of leaders. A melech, a physical leader, and a kohen gadol, a spiritual leader. And they have to have different midos, because they have different jobs. The kohen gadol is more spiritual. He's all day in the Beis HaMikdash. He is removed from fighting and wars. And the Melech is in the physical world. He's involved in making wars and killing people, upholding justice. He needs different character traits. So it could be that Yaakov would have been the head of the tribe of Klal Yisrael that would produce the Kohen Gadol, and Esav would have been the head of the tribes of Klal Yisrael that would produce the Malachim, the physical leaders of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, Esav had to have a character that attracted him to the physical world. Not necessarily do something bad, just the opposite. Like a melech, builds and corrects and edifies the physical world. Maybe that's what Esav was destined for. Therefore, Esav was attracted to the more physical parts of the world. The most physical part of the world is where they serve Avodah Zarah and take Ruchnius and turn it into Gashmius. He's attracted there, but doesn't say he wanted to serve Avodah Zarah. In fact, the Talmidim of the Arizal ask a question, Sifsei Kohen, the Sefer Al HaTorah from the Talmidim of the Arizal. They ask the following question. It says, every time Rivka passed by a base of Avodah Zarah, Esav wanted to go out. They ask a very simple question. What was Rivka doing there? You're not allowed to be in a base of Avodah Zarah. Every time she passed by a base of Avodah Zarah, what was she doing there? They say Rivka grew up amongst Obdei Avodah Zarah. She understood them, and she was able to be mashbi on them. She went there to be mekarev them. Who says that Esav didn't want to come out to be mekarev the people? He was drawn towards the more physical places of the world, but not necessarily to do good or bad. He didn't have a Yetzer Hara yet. Like we said, the Yetzer Hara doesn't exist before birth. It wasn't his Yetzer Hara drawing him. It was his nature of being a person more drawn towards the physical part of the world, because he would have been a melech, and I have a proof to it. There was another person in history who had the same character makeup as Esav. Who was it? David HaMelech. Admoni u'yefei enayim. So it seems to prove what I'm saying. Esav had the character traits of a melech. And Yaakov had the character traits of a Kohen Gadol. He was more attracted towards the spiritual places in the world. That does not mean that he was automatically a tzaddik. It doesn't say he wanted to go out and learn. It says he wanted to go out. You can be attracted towards spirituality and be a Rosh HaGomer. You could be a guru who sits on the top of a mountain and contemplates his navel for 40 years. Right? That's possible too. That's not a tzaddik. That's a meshugana. So, but you're spiritual, very spiritual. You can be attracted to a spiritual place in the world, the Beis Medrash, never learn a word. Drink a little coffee, walk around, speak a little Lashon Hara there, a little bit of Lashon Hara there. But you like the atmosphere. It's a more spiritual place. But you're chosen out of tzaddik. So just being attracted to more spiritual places or more physical places doesn't make you a tzaddik or a rasha. So Esav and Yaakov were different personalities. But they each could have used their personalities for the good or for the bad. No one decreed one was going to be a tzaddik, one a rasha. They just were different for a reason. And therefore, when they were born, no one took notice. Of course they were different, but nobody took notice of it because it didn't mean anything. All it meant is that they're different personalities. It's only when they became bar mitzvah and they started making moral choices that Esav chose to go out and hunt and to use his personality, not necessarily for mitzvahs, and Yaakov decided to use his personality for mitzvah to go learn Torah. Then people took notice. One thing in parentheses now, because I forgot to mention it before. We asked a second question on the Rambam. The Rambam says that you can be as smart or as dumb as you want to, and the Gemara says that that's decreed on a person. The answer again is there's two kinds of smart and dumb. There's IQ, that's decreed. How much your IQ is going to be if you're a genius or you're dumb, that pretty much is decreed. You can't change it too much. You can change it a few points. But if you have a 50 IQ, you're not going to be Einstein. And if you have 150 IQ, you're not going to be dull. But that doesn't make you a tzaddik or a rasha. There have been many geniuses in this world who were Rishoyim. And there were many dull people who were Tzaddikim. What the Rambam says is not decreed, is Chacham the Sachol, not Chacham the Tipesh. Chacham the Tipesh is IQ. Chacham the Sachol means a fool. You can be a genius and act like a fool. That is moral choices. And you can be dull and act very wisely. That's not decreed. What your IQ is, that's decreed. But it has nothing to do with you being a tzaddik or a rasha. Okay. So in any case, so that was Esav and Yaakov. Now, that's very nice until Esav did his three major averes. So Yitzchak felt, okay, here's Esav, my little king. He needs the bracha. Talat shamayim mishmanei haaretz. Yavducha mi mishtachavu lechol yumim. That's a bracha for a king. That's not a bracha for a kohen gadol. So of course he wanted to give Esav that bracha. That's the bracha of Gashmias. So who's it go to? Of course Esav. And he looked at Esav as a little king. King in development. And therefore, Yitzchak Avinu knew that Esav wasn't exactly the most polite person, because kings don't go around saying please and thank you. They have to be aggressive. Okay, he hasn't yet polished it to his father. You say please and thank you. But that's not the nature of a king. Okay, so he hasn't yet polished it off. But of course he doesn't say please and thank you. And even the Ramban, the Maral say that Yitzchak looked at it as a mila that Esav didn't mention God's name. Because Esav was all day in the forest with dead animals where he wasn't allowed to mention God's name. So he was afraid ever to mention God's name for fear that he mention it where you're not allowed. He was machmer. Never to mention it. That's how Yitzchak looked at it. And Yaakov lives in a base medrash, so why shouldn't he mention God's name? So Yitzchak saw these things not as negative, but as extensions of Esav's personality developing into a king. The only problem is, that was good up until the three sins that he did. What did he do? Murder. He also seduced an engaged woman. And he served Avodah Zorah. Those are pretty hefty sins. I mean, at that point, you can't say, well, that's a king. No, that's a rasha. So didn't Yitzchak recognize that? The answer is, one of them is clear, what I'm going to tell you. Clear. And because of that, you have to say something similar about the other two, even though it sounds a little contrived. Which one is clear? Esav that day was a murderer. He murdered somebody. Who did he murder? Nimrod. Nimrod was the Hitler of his time. The arch enemy of civilization. The arch Russia. Okay? If somebody would have murdered Hitler, or even better, if somebody will murder Ahmadinejad, right, the Karo, okay? Will he be considered a murderer or a hero? By most people in the world, he'd be considered a hero. Okay? He will rid the world of a tyrant, of a Rosh, a Marusha. Esav killed Nimrod. Can't you see Yitzchak saying, my little king, 15 years old, he's already killed the worst Rosh in the world. What do kings do? They kill Rishoyim. That's what a king's supposed to do. So here Esav managed to kill Nimrod. Wow, he's only 15. He's really on his way to become a great king. What's the bad? So why did Chazal say he was a murderer? The answer is very simple. If you kill Nimrod to rid the world of a Rasha, you're a hero and a tzaddik. If you kill Nimrod because you want his uniform, you're a Rasha gomer. You're a murderer. Esav killed Nimrod not because he wanted to rid the world of a Rasha. He wanted his clothes. He's a murderer. He's a Rasha. But that's a very subtle thing. You could see how Yitzchak could be done on the Kafskos. He killed him because he wanted to rid the world of a Rasha. He's a tzaddik. How about the other two things? He seduced an engaged girl. Tosus right away asks, by Goyim, there's no such thing as engaged. Engagement is like our engagement. You're not married. From the Torah, Arusa, Nara Amurasa means she's married. She's a married woman in the first stage of marriage. That's the Hareat Mekudeshesli. It's the first part of the chuppah. That didn't exist by Goyim. The only marriage they had is actually living together. That created marriage. Nothing before that. So all he did was seduce a woman who wasn't married, but was in the future promised to this man. Can't you see that Esav could have fooled himself or surely fooled others and said the following? This poor girl is engaged to an idol worshiper. If she gets married to him, that's the end of her life. She's finished. Wouldn't it be better if she was married to me? Esav, the son of Yitzchak and Rivka, right? And the only way I can get her away from them is to seduce her. So he's makariv her, a little close, but he was makariv her. Don't you know that there are people, or were people, without going into any details or even hints, that considered kiruv, hugging and kissing women or men, for the sake of kiruv, when makariv them to Yiddishkeit? And they, in their distorted minds, felt that that was okay. You're doing it's a shame mitzvah. So how possible that Esav also felt that this is kiruv. And okay, it's not exactly nice, but you know, kings do a lot of not nice things. You learn Tanakh, right? With all of the chazals that who call Omer David Chata Toeth, but he still did something that didn't look nice. In Tanakh, the Rabban Shem gave it to him, David and Bathsheba. So that's what kings do. Kings are not necessarily people who do things that look the nicest things, but that's a king. And he has to sometimes do Ratzon Hashem in a way that's not so nice. And the fact that he would have Avodah Zarah, he could have presented it the following way. I'm going to have to destroy this Avodah Zarah someday when I become king. The best way to do is infiltrate it from the inside. Do you know that in the 1950s, Gedolim permitted girls and boys, yeshiva boys, seminary, I don't know if there were seminaries at the time, but Benos Torah, to go into missionaries and pretend they were interested in converting, to find children who were taken by the church after the Holocaust and raised as goyim. And the churches wouldn't let people in to check and see. So they got in by being double agents. They disguised themselves as people interested in converting to Christianity. They took off their yarmulkes, shaved their beards, and the Gedolim permitted it. It's pikuach nefesh. Worse than pikuach nefesh. So maybe Esav fooled himself, or at least fooled Yitzchak. And Yitzchak had a mitzvah of Don Lekapschus. It was possible. I mean, look, he killed Nimrod. It's very possible to think he's a hero, not a murderer. So maybe the other two things also. There's ways of explaining it that could be that he thought he was doing a mitzvah. So Yitzchak had a mitzvah of Don Lekapschus. It's possible. And Esav's going to be my king, and he no reason to think he's not a tzaddik. So he was done on the kapschus. It wasn't that he was fooled. The halacha is done the kapschus. I, Rivka. Yitzchak never came in contact with hypocrites and fakers. Yishmael was thrown out of the house. Lot was thrown out of the house. He only saw either Avram, or he saw Rishoyim, Avodah Zarah, black and white. He never saw the gray. So he couldn't imagine that somebody could look like a tzaddik and act and be a Russia. So he was chayiv to doubt. He gave him kapschus. Rivka grew up amongst fakers. Her brother was a faker. Her father was a faker. So she could smell a faker a mile away. She had no doubts. When there's no doubts, there's no don the kapschus. She knew that Esav was a faker. He wasn't a tzaddik. He was a Russia. So now the only problem we have is why didn't she go and tell Yitzchak, Esav's a Russia, you're making a mistake. You've done on the Kapschos, I'm telling you there's no suffix. He's a Russia. Says Rosh Hashem Paul Hirsch, she could have gone to Yitzchak and tell him that Esav is a Russia and doesn't deserve this bracha. He's out of the picture. And Yitzchak would have listened to her. But he wouldn't have given the bracha to Yaakov either. Because he would have said, Yaakov's a nice guy, but he's a totally different personality. He's my Kohen Gadol. He's a nice guy, sits in a base medrash and learns, but I'm going to give him the bracha, Yavducha Amin, Yishtachavu Lechol Le'umim, Tala Shamayim, Mishmane. What does he need all of that? He's not a king. So I won't give the bracha to either of them. Rivka said, I want you to go and show your father there's nobody else. That means that if they're going to be kings in Klal Yisrael, they're going to come from you. That means that even though your nature is more the Kohen Gadol, you have within you to be the Melech too. And you can act like a Melech to such a degree that you can fool your father to thinking that you're Esav. And that will convince him that you deserve the bracha of the Melech. And that's what he did. He went in and he showed him, Hakol called Yaakov, this is a person with the voice of Yaakov and the hands of Esav. And because he didn't recognize him, he gave him a bracha. Doesn't make sense because he didn't recognize him, he shouldn't have done nothing. But because he saw there was one person here who had both character traits, that's why he gave him the bracha. Because he realized that one of his sons is going to have both of these things. It's not going to come from both of them. And later on, when Esav came and he saw Gehenna open, he realized that Esav Taka is out of the picture. But Rivka convinced him that Yaakov was fit for that bracha. She could have told him that Esav wasn't fit. But she couldn't convince him that Yaakov was fit unless Yaakov himself came in and fooled him and made him think it was Esav. Meaning that he, if he had to, could muster the character traits of Esav and use them if he needed them. And then he deserved the bracha of the Melech too, not just the Kohen Gadol. That is the parsha. The parsha is not one of predestined Rishayim or Tzadikim. It's a parsha of different personalities. But either of them could have used their personalities for the good, either of them could have used their personalities for the bad.